Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. I am one of your hosts. My name is Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, is.
Your other host, Billy Crash.
Yeah, because, yeah. I don't know. That double your pleasure, double your fun? I don't know.
Yeah, that's what we're all about.
Is that what we have to offer, Bill? I don't know.
I have no idea. Give us a dollar and we'll leave you alone. How about
I'd be down with that, actually. I'd have a couple dollars. Anyway,
that?
we are in the month of February,
Woo!
and we are kicking off this month with, hey, we're going to do shows that center around women in horror in some way, because February, as if you didn't know already, is Women in Horror Month. Not that we necessarily need a month to commemorate all the great women in
That's
front of and
true.
behind the camera who contribute to the genre. But hey, it's as good a time as any to celebrate that.
Oh, yeah.
And Billy, you came up with an interesting topic for tonight's show, and I think you should maybe you should tell us about it and where it came from, and we can go from there, because it was a really, you texted me and I was like, hey, that's really interesting and really good and something we haven't done before,
All
so.
right. Well, I had the f pleasure of finally watching The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Yay.
And yay! And I was thinking of how there were similarities with the wonderful film, well, the wonderful disturbing film, Dead Girl, and how we had these two female characters who were either dead or undead, and they're on a slab, and men are around them, and hijinks ensue. And I was just like, what are we talking about in regard to, theme and, respect for women, dead or alive, and, moving on from there. So I thought it would be a cool little hard double feature for us.
Yeah, absolutely, Bill. And something I find interesting about the two films, sort of a shared thread, in addition to what you just mentioned, is the people surrounding the women in these films. They are men, but they're kind of pairs.
Yes, exactly.
Not in the fruity sense, but.
What fruity? What the? Oh my God.
Bill, a pair, come on. Anyway.
Oh.
But in any case, in the Autopsy of Jane Doe, you have it's really interesting. I like what that film did, because it's a father-son mortician team,
Yep. Emil Hirsch and
and
Brian Cox.
yes, and they're wonderful
Oh yeah, absolutely.
to get together. And in Dead Girl, you primarily focus on the struggle and the conflict between two teenage boys, JT and Ricky, played by Noah Segan and Shiloh Fernandez. But on the outside of that, each of those, each of the, I should say, Ricky in Dead Girl has a potential love interest. He has a girl he's kind of fawned over for a couple years. And then in Autopsy of Jane Doe, Emil Hirsch's character has a steady girlfriend. So I think it's kind of interesting, I guess the how the character dynamics, in a way, just in a purely like a surface sense, mirror each other in those two films.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, it's funny, because as soon as you brought that up, I automatically thought a lot of times when people are alone and certain situations occur, they it's funny. A lot of people might act accordingly, might be the way you should be in certain situations. But when you have that other person there to help egg you on, maybe bully you in some fashion, or go, hey, come on, man, I want to do this. Okay, I want to do it too. And then you lead to that, you know, binary mini mob mentality.
Yeah.
And you just want to, you know, you end up doing something that you're probably going to regret later.
Well, and that's something else, Bill, because, you know, these two movies have their similarities in the fact that you have a woman who is dead or undead in a prone position. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the dynamic between the two characters and Jane Doe, it's very much like a tough love, not a tough love even kind of thing. It's obvious that... you know, father has great affection for son, and son is not just some sort of like little asshole jerk kind of who's like, oh, I'm in this job because I have to inherit the family business or whatever. At some point, they, you know, has his own interests as like a 20-something male. You know, he wants to, you know, his girlfriend wants to go out to a movie with him, but he's like, oh, I gotta stay late and help my dad with this. So he has a certain like conflict with his character where he's like, oh, I really want to do normal young person stuff, but I have this devotion to my dad, and he's actually fairly good at his job, despite the fact that he gets schooled by his father, in sort of a affectionate way. But with Dead Girl, it's kind of like the opposite. You have that sort of, like you said, that mob bully mentality almost, which is very reflective of teenage boys, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was. They're both intriguing. They're both unsettling. They both films create an excellent atmosphere of foreboding, and they both extend. A mystery, more so, of course, with the autopsy of Jane Doe, but and it's like, man, where's this? Where are we going? You know, it's like, and it's unsettling. I guess that's the word of the night, unsettling. But it was just interesting, you know, that whole, you know, like teen boy mentality, and especially with Dead Girl. And I kept thinking of, you know, when I'm watching it, it's like I automatically think when I'm in a movie, and I mean I'm in it and I'm feeling it and all that stuff, it's like, all right, what would I be doing if I was in this situation? And I have a feeling, knowing how I was as a teenager, I was like, don't go near that. You know? Who knows what you're going to get, man? You know?
Yeah.
But then when you have that character, you know, Noah Segan, man, he just killed it in that film, as he does in every movie. He rocks it.
Absolutely.
You know, talk about an instigator and a manipulator and a motivator. It's like, come on, man. You know, like you can just see him. You know, what are you, pussy? It's like, oh, you know, and you know, when you're a teen boy and you get called that, you know, it's like you can't say I'm not a pussy. You got to do something. You know, so.
Oh yeah, yeah. Or you forever have to live it, you know, live down, you know, the insults in the hallways and all that shit. So,
yeah. And again, you know, what we have with both films is in Dead Girl, we have these two young teens. They're like, you know, skipping school. They go into this abandoned, you know, like, you know, building where, you know, what medical treatments are done. What was it? Just a regular hospital or.
Come on, let's go to the Nut House, Billy.
The Nut House. I forgot. And in the basement in the Nut House, strapped to a gurney, is, let's put it this way, a zombie woman played by Jenny Spain. Mm-hmm. And in Autopsy of Jane Doe, and I love the mystery element behind it all, perfect corpse, no markings, nothing like that, is found in the house where everybody else in the house is a very unperfect corpse. They are ripped to shreds. They are destroyed. Yeah. And the sheriff wants Sheriff Burke, played by Michael McElhattan, he wants answers, so he takes him to Tommy and Austin, Brian Cox and Emil Hirsch, you know, take the body, and Jane Doe's played by Olwyn Kelly, and you know they have to decipher like, well, how did she die? And once they start doing their autopsy, you know, things unfold, not to be funny with the flapping of skin or anything like that. But very, I thought it was a really, really, both of tales are extremely intriguing. They're both different, unique, intimate, small, tight stories. Andre Ovredal directed The Autopsy of Jane Doe, and it was written by Ian B. Goldberg and Richard Ng. And as we should all know by now at this point, Michael Sarmiento and Gaddy Harrell were the directors of Dead Girl with writer Trent Haga. And I think it's really interesting. We have male writers again. We have two directors for each film. It's pretty, there's a lot of similarities, but, and I guess that's why we're doing a show.
Well, Bill, maybe we should it might be prudent for us before we get too much into the guts of the matter to, yeah, sorry. I'm
No,
just
you're not.
not, yeah, the puns are not good. I've been a little under the weather, so I apologize, folks. My rapier wit is not what it usually is.
Foiled again, Johnny.
But maybe we should issue a spoiler alarm, Bill, before we get too much into the into the films, unless you want to try and keep it spoiler free as a challenge. You think we can?
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. If we need to like let that, unleash the spoiler alert, we will, but I think we should just let's give it a shot.
Well, Billy's uncertainty towards a spoiler warning can serve as a potential spoiler warning. Let's just put
Yeah.
it that way.
Well, let's see. I mean, we're going to be talking about the thematic elements, and we'll see what we could do to avoid giving away certain things, but
Sure.
cool.
Well, Bill, something you were mentioning the setting in Dead Girl, and something these two films share is like you said, there's an intimacy to the hospital grounds in Dead Girl, as there is an intimacy, obviously, just by necessity of the morgue in the basement of the funeral home.
Yeah, both lower depths, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like you're descending into kind of some sort of hell in a way. And the thing is, you don't know it until, it's kind of smacking you in the face, so to speak.
Agreed.
And that's something I like, and it does complement, like you were saying, the intimacy of both pieces. I mean, both films exist in a greater world. Like they don't just take place in those single settings, but they keep ultimately returning to those settings, almost like it's like you're the inexorable draw towards like you said, Bill. It's like, oh, is this thing I should not be interested in this. This is so wrong, but I can't keep myself away from it, kind of for various reasons, especially in the case of Dead Girl.
Yeah.
Do you think the you thought the depiction of teenage boys in Dead Girl was pretty accurate, correct?
Well, I was, imagining a situation like that occurring, and what would you do? You're a young boy, virginal maybe, and you have an opportunity to take advantage of a dead girl. It's like, I could see it being a moral conundrum for some young guys.
Well, Bill, when you brought this topic up, I was thinking of another film, or actually two films because it's been remade. I was thinking of the two versions of I Spit on Your Grave.
Oh, yeah.
And that in those films it's very clearly and explicitly, there's no question that it's a rape and revenge film. And the fact that the rapists in those films, after this, woman Jennifer Hills has been, beaten and degraded
Violated, yeah.
and violated to a humiliating and disgusting degree, the men still come at her, looking for that sexual payoff. And the same thing, I would say the same thing applies to Dead Girl. Because
Yeah.
Because it's like, even I know I've mentioned it on the show before, but there's a scene near the end where someone has attached a page of a magazine to the dead girl's face of like some attractive model or whatever. And to me, that just underlines the detachment kind of these young characters. It's the perfect it's the objectifying cherry
Oh,
on top.
absolutely.
Yeah, on top of that sundae.
Yeah, to the nth degree. I mean, it was just incredible where it was like she's just, she's just a semi-living doll. She's just, and I know some guys think this, not that I hang out with these guys, but a woman, just, three holes, to fuck. And it's like, what the hell? And that's disgusting and disheartening on every damn level. And yeah, it was just this just that's what added to the whole disturbing nature of the film. It wasn't just the horror of it. It was the horror where I think a lot of people who were watching this was like, I could actually if there was like a zombie woman in a basement of an asylum and some guys found her, this is probably what would have happened. And that's sad. It's sad and sick, and boy, man, well, we're not going to talk about the ending, but still one of the most, what an ending. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, and it's interesting because in that movie there is this transformation of character. Like
Oh, yeah.
these characters do have their arcs, and are they pleasant to watch? And fuck no.
Coming of age in the wrong way.
Absolutely. And I think maybe, I don't know if Trent Haga was like consciously sort of trying to tap into the notions of I don't want to jump to conclusions here, but I feel like with the proliferation of the internet and all the bad stuff you can potentially find on it if you're curious enough and your parents aren't checking your monitoring you too closely, you can rabbit trail down into some pretty nasty stuff. And if you watch enough of that stuff, you can get. I used to look at rotten.com a lot, so it's like you do get to a degree. It's like you do kind of get desensitized to stuff, whether it's pornography or violence or whatever. And I think there's probably been many books and TV specials done on the notion of, at what point do you sort of like detach from the humanity or the inhumanity of what you're watching and start to accept it as something it's okay, it's acceptable. You try to rationalize excuses for it, like, oh well, that person obviously consented to have X, Y, and Z done to them, even though it doesn't look very pleasant.
And I think that's it's always important to to just take a step back and not even take a step back, but it's almost become automatic for me. I always think, well, what if that was me? And it's like, all right, this isn't right. It's just like, if I'm not feeling good about it, because if I was in a particular situation, then it's not a good situation. And, people aren't disposable. Women, are not disposable. And that's what I think is really interesting. We have two women in these films who cannot speak. They cannot stand up for themselves. They cannot do anything. Yet both in their own way, even in their states of demise, they have a presence and they have a major effect. And especially with the latter, with Jane Doe, which I think is really was really interesting what they did with that. As it's funny, it's weird. It's like we have to uncover this mystery by ripping a person apart and getting in there, and is it a disrespectful violation, or is it? I don't know. I don't know. I'm still thinking about them. I really, really loved it. I thought it was wonderful.
When did you say you watched this again, Bill?
Last week.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah, I watched it a couple months back. And I'm glad you got us back on track with that one, because I think something interesting, and you spoke to the whole mystery element of the film, which I also think is very, very cool. Do you feel
With my hands, Johnny, with my hands.
Oh God, we're just knocking it out of the park tonight. That's all I gotta say. Well, Bill, the treatment of the, not, I don't, I'm not saying treatment in this in the sense of how the characters treat these women. I'm talking about
Right.
more just the almost the representation of the dead and the undead in these two films. And in Jane Doe,
Right.
for example, like you said, she's a corpse, she's on a slab, and they're doing an autopsy on her to try and find out who she is. Did you feel like there was any like objectification going on outside of the necessary objectification, I would say, for to progress the story along of the film?
Well, that's what I keep thinking about. I mean, you know, once in a while the father, son, you know, might make a joke, but it wasn't about the body, the person, you know, which was wonderful. And I think that's one of the reasons that they gave Emil Hirsch's character a girlfriend too, so he would have somebody that, you know, he wouldn't be like this sex crazed, you know, college student, you know, who's like, oh man, I'm not getting any, and this woman's hot. Like, there was none of that. It's like they wanted to make sure it was removed from the equation. And you know, Sue's girlfriend was Emma Ophelia Lovabond. But I didn't see that at all. But I think one of the things that it made clear by story's end was, even though they were doing everything right, and you know, they're, you know, doing the classic Y, you know, incision and getting the cl you know, the heavy, you know, clippers to break through the breastbone and dig in deep, that they were actually violating this person. It's just that they didn't know it.
Ah, that's good, Bill. I like that.
Thank you.
And but you know, I guess what I was getting at was sometimes in films, and I don't know if I've just become more attuned to it. I don't know if I'm getting old and conservative and how and cynical and how I look at movies. But I'm like, you know, the Michael Bay shit of sticking a camera basically up against Megan Fox's ass in short shorts kind of thing. I'm like, you know, and you could see something like Jane Doe or Dead Girl, like the and especially as I, you know, I'll say it as written and directed by male filmmakers. I think I have seen filmmakers who just kind of take advantage because, oh, it's cool. You know, that's cool. That's what our audience is looking for. But in these two movies, and especially Jane Doe, where you have this, like you said, this character she's on the slab, she's fully naked, and you know, the camera is not flinching away from her. Because obviously it's out of necessity to the story. Like I said, it's kind of like, well, you're discovering stuff along with these characters as things progress. So I didn't feel like there was a, you know, I didn't feel like there
Like a
was a,
TNA element to it, right?
yeah, there
Yeah, I
just
didn't
despite,
think so at all for either one.
yeah, it wasn't like a prurient, like it was like, oh, it's fap fodder for like 12-year-olds or whatever who snuck in a viewing kind of when their parents went to sleep. It wasn't like that at
Right.
all.
It's not like a sorority party at in a slasher film, you know.
No, yeah, it really wasn't. Yeah, it really wasn't designed to like stimulate the libido at all.
No, that's, yeah, it's funny that you brought it up, because I just, it, to me, it was such a non-issue. I didn't even recognize it, you know, because, like, you know, you just have that sensation automatic, well, at least I did, you know, automatically, that it's like, you know, this isn't, you know, like I just said, one of those crazy, you know, old time crappy slasher films with, you know, women with, you know, big breasts running around. No, and I think it's interesting because in both films you have men who are suddenly in power positions, although we wouldn't consider, I don't think, two people performing an autopsy is like being powerful over a body because that person is dead. At least we hope so. And so it was interesting. I think, boy, I better stop because I could head right in a big spoiler alert territory, but I think it was interesting because it was like one of those things where, is ignorance enough of an excuse? Because it's like, oh, we didn't know. Well, too bad. It's like you're gonna pay. It's like one of those deals.
Well, Bill, not to interrupt,
No, go ahead, man.
but we did back in 2017, we did the Prince of Darkness show, and I
Oh,
think
yeah.
there's a certain element of Prince of Darkness indirectly in Autopsy of Jane Doe. I think there is that like you said, the two characters trying to uncover a mystery, but there's also like the well, like you said, what happens when something transcends what you've been taught, what you're accustomed to seeing, just kind of like, oh, it's just, what happens when it becomes just more than another day at the job kind of thing, that's what I kind of like about
Definitely.
that.
Yeah, hard.
Well, Bill, okay, all right. What do you think about the functionality of the two quote unquote normal love interests in each film? You mentioned Emil Hirsch's girlfriend in Autopsy of Jane Doe,
Shiloh.
and Shiloh Fernandez's sort of the girl he's fawning over in Dead Girl.
That was Candace King, right?
I believe Candace Akola.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah,
She's a yeah.
Candace Akola.
Yeah, she's Candace King now.
As Joanne, yeah.
I think they did. I think they served in two ways. They anchored two of the characters, in regards to that they're loving, giving, caring, people,
Absolutely, yeah.
that they could have normal relationships, that they can connect with a person, care about them, love them, respect them, and that still doesn't mean things won't go wrong, but at least for one character. Significantly so in the worst possible way, but I think that's what it was. I don't think it was contrived or anything like that because I didn't feel that with either film. It was just like, well, this is normal. And then both these guys end up in an extraordinary, uncanny situation and things change. So are there real colors coming out? Especially with Shiloh Fernandez's character Ricky, and actually I think that's where the movies differ in that regard. Ricky's character, he might, something might happen with him and his relationship, but with what happens with Emil Hirsch's character and Emma, it's very different, and it takes a toll on him emotionally in a different way. And obviously what happens is when you're highly emotional, adrenaline rush, and you're not thinking logically, and that could lead to bad decision making, and it, life, the world could become very unnerving. And that's interesting because where in Dead Girl you have a character pushing someone else, when a certain situation occurs, and Emil Hirsch's character's freaking out, dad's there to like say, hold on, son, and that's good. Instead of being led astray, they're doing all the right things, but still in the end it's doing the right thing enough.
Well, and something I like about the dynamic between Brian Cox and Emil Hirsch is the fact that, like you said, Bill, the father is a very grounding figure, even when things start to get really loopy in that movie. And I think there is this element of vulnerability to Emil Hirsch, kind of. He is kind of like the Autopsy of Jane Doe's Ricky character, basically, because he's got those doubts, he's got those uncertainties. He's obviously a very he's kind of a sensitive fella, and we've all been there, guys, at some point. But it's really, yeah, I like the dynamic between him and his father, and the fact that he's kind of still in that sort of limbo of the push pull between like my commitment to father and then commitment to girlfriend, who's obviously very accommodating towards it's like, oh, this he this is what he does, I can handle it. Something you said, Bill, is the fact that I like that they didn't turn the morticians into the squirmy, squirrely, like beanpole, creepy guys that you see in a lot of movies.
Yeah, we got a body.
It's like you don't have that weird third guy coming in, like who's like just kind of standing off in the corner with like sweaty palms and stuff like that,
Oh
just
man, jeez.
waiting for that shock value moment where he like jumps on the table or something like that.
Yeah, it was more like, okay, this is weird. This isn't right. And they were taking, especially the father was taking, he was perturbed and he was taking a logical scientific approach to things. It's like, one thing at a time, we have to figure out what happened. And it's actually the irony is like what they were doing was actually to help her. And, well, anyway, yeah, but I think that's one of the interesting things in the movie. It's really interesting because it was one of those movies, actually, the latter, Autopsy of Jane Doe. What I really enjoyed is who's the antagonist?
Is there an antagonist?
Exactly. I don't think there is one. And I think circumstance can create its own problems and situations and monsters. We definitely had an antagonist in Dead Girl, but
It wasn't the dead girl.
no, it wasn't. And I think that's why I enjoyed this movie so much, because it almost had like an effect like the movie Grace by Paul Soleil, where you have several characters. It's like they all want different things. It doesn't mean that anyone's evil or hyper cruel or wrong or anything like that. In a way, they're all right. And and it just goes from there. So
That's a great parallel there, Bill. I didn't think about that one.
thank you.
And well, and then there are people who are like, well, you can't write a script without like a clearly defined antagonist or whatever. And I'd like, yeah, I like how the conflict springs out of the circumstances in Grace and in Autopsy of Jane Doe. And yeah, I think it's fantastic. And someplace where the two films diverge, Bill. There are many places where they diverge, actually, as we're finding out. But you were speaking to Ricky's change of character in his arc in Dead Girl. You know what I like about that film
Tell me.
is it. Well, and I'm not going to give anything away, but it's going to be slightly challenging. But I like the fact that the film ends, if you're really paying attention, it ends on a note of condemnation, I feel. It's not the ending to me says that it's like, whoa, we are not th this it's not cool. We're not endorsing this, and it's like things could have gone either way for his character, and then it's then it comes to that, oh, that reveal, and then it's like, oh shit. And it make and it, it kind of makes you, so I guess what Trent Haga achieved with that, with his script, which I thought was extremely like perceptive and
yes,
of teenage attitudes and attitudes toward women and how women are objectified and, you know, like
at
you
any
said,
age and in any state.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, those scumbags who are like women are just three holes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you know, by the end of that film, you're not like, oh, man, well, that was great. You know, oh, that was a fucking cool ass film. I was like, no, I mean, it's a great movie, but it is not like I just wrote a review of Mayhem over at Loud Green Bird. And I'm like, that's a movie that tries everything in its power to be cool.
Mm.
And if the guy directing that had directed Dead Girl, you would have seen a very different film and a film that I think probably would be very irresponsible.
But I like that word. Yeah.
By comparison. So mm-hmm. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that, Bill? Do you agree with that assessment, or what are your thoughts on where Dead Girl kind of goes without giving anything away? And
I like that, because especially what it does to the viewer, you know, at least what it did to me, I felt like dirty, you know, and I was like,
oh yeah,
I don't, oh man, no, oh, you know, I was just like that, and like, yeah. And I think it's great because it cemented me in the moral place where I need to be, you know. It's like okay, cool. I wasn't like, man, because if I was hanging out with somebody, oh, that was awesome. Like, hey, do you believe he did that? That's great, man. It'd be like, get out of my house. You know, it's like, don't go near anybody I know who's a woman. Like, just stay away. And I think so. I think it was very excellent writing, very sharp writing, and excellent direction to make it work and to make you feel that knot in your stomach at the end, which I think is what really sells the film.
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, George Romero, the late, great George Romero, mm-hmm. said something about the mentality of crafting a horror film. And he said there's this mentality that's very wrong, where the movie comes to its conclusion and order is restored.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know what, you don't want to do that, even though he's done it a bunch of times. but you know, I get what he's saying, because you know, you ended on that sense of ambiguity or in the midst of some sort of chaos.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps you, that's what rattles you. You know, mm-hmm. it's not the at the end of War of the Worlds, the Spielberg version, which sucked anyway. Hey, Tom Cruise gets back together with his family and they're all right. Thumbs up. Sorry, everybody. Didn't see that coming, Spielberg. But, you know, that's why I like just horror in general. It's like, granted, there are horror films with quote unquote happy endings, but
usually commercial horrors. Yeah.
I mean, even you look at something like the end of The Exorcist, for that matter, it's like there's still that sense of unease at the very end of that film, even though the evil has been vanquished. But
or has it?
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. But yeah, so sorry, Bill, you say something now.
No, I am. No, one of the things that's really interesting is when it comes to, you know, there's like, you know, being a young man and all, and still, even so, and this is what I love, you know, because we're, you know, men and women are just, we're different in many ways, and there's nothing wrong with that. You mm-hmm. know, men are usually physically stronger, but hey, man, if you want, like, I remember even when I was young, I remember when women wanted to be firefighters, and I'm like, well, they're not as strong. But I was a kid, and I was only taking into account strength. I wasn't taking into account constitution. I wasn't taking into account balance, which women are better at than men. And, you know, when I was in the service in the Coast Guard, that's when I realized it's like, yeah, I want female team members and men mixed together, like Starship Troopers. And, you know, because, you know, we all have strengths that we can lean on. And I also noticed, and to this day, it just seems to be true, anytime I see a woman, you know, fire a shot, you know, from a gun or rifle, it's like they're usually out shooting the guys. And it's like, it's interesting because in the Autopsy of Jane Doe, we're looking at these men who are looking at the mystique of a woman. And in this case, they're actually, and it's great, and this is great writing too, because they're not looking at the mystique of her femininity, but they're looking at the mystique of how she could have possibly passed on. Like, what could have done this to her? What's going on? So that was interesting, but still that mystique of the woman was there. And you do have that mystique in Dead Girl, but only for complete, like, oh, wow, let's fuck it. You know, that was, and that's the weird part, because it's like, it should have been something completely different. Like, wait a minute, how did this happen? How can she be moving? What is going on? No, let's have, it was like hormone insanity. But still, the, you know, these guys wanted to satisfy that internal urge, that hunger, whatever. And obviously they weren't raised right. But, you know, you have, you know, the mystique of the woman existed even in death, even in maybe a moribund state, even in a seemingly powerless state. And in the end, that mystique is what, what, Johnny? What did that mystique do in the end? That's my question to you.
Well, you know,
train of thought totally derailed.
No, that's cool. Well, to something to what you said was the lack of intellectual curiosity, kind of. It's like, this is what happens when you get teenage boys in a room, and there's a certain, I guess you could say, ambiance to the room. Dead Girl, mm-hmm. as a character, is part, you know, it's, she's part zombie, part, like you said, fuck doll, basically. Yeah. And, you know, and that's, there's, like you said, there's no sense of, yeah, there's no sense of
morality.
Yeah, it's like, why is she down there? This building is abandoned, apparently. Why was she not taken? I guess, what, you know, where's some, go through the medical charts on another floor or something like that.
Exactly. Exactly. And the thing is, you know, I'm thinking, and it was funny because every time I imagine her being abandoned, I imagine her being abandoned by male scientists. You know, that's all. I never see a woman in a group, and it's like, yeah, let's just leave her over there, or leave it over there. I could see like the whole notion of identity being completely removed. And it's like, but she's dead. You know, who cares? She's moving, man. That we got. So let's go. Let's have some fun. And it's like, oh my God. I mean, I didn't hang out with people like this. You know, it's like I didn't. And yeah, I already know. Like, if I was there, it'd be like, I'd probably had that crap kicked out of me. But no one how scrawny I was when I was younger. But
you know, Bill, just to get real for a moment.
Let's get real, man.
I had a very, during my teen years, my sexuality was a very strange thing to me. And it was actually more often than not a source of like an almost embarrassment in a way, like, the whole of going through puberty and discovering these certain stirrings. And I probably would have been like the Ricky character in that scenario. I would have been like, or the guy kind of cowering in the corner or whatever.
I just
would have been like, well, this is, it would have been like the same ping ponging kind of sense. It's like, oh my God. And then, oh my God, kind of thing. So, you know, it's just, yeah, let alone like the weird sort of, it's like the weird sort of porn shoot sensibility that the film takes on, kind of in a sense where it's like, hey, the guys are all just hanging out in the room and they're watching each other do stuff and everything like that. And it's sort of like that diseased mentality where that stuff becomes that's normalized because you oversaturate yourself with that. And, you know, you become a, just like, oh yeah, this is normal.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I think it applies to any situation. I think it applies to any situation where suddenly things are abnormal and maybe, let's say, there is no friend around and you're alone. Or even if there is a friend around, it doesn't matter. Let's say you go to a gas station, can't find anybody. Hey, man, you want some Snickers? Well, I'll leave money on the counter. Why? Just take it. You know, like, you know, and it could be one of those things where it's like, well, no one's around. I can get away with it. And it's like, do we let our moral guard down when we do that? You know, and a lot of people do, you know, we've seen that throughout history and time and everything else. So I think it's one of those things as well. Like the old line from a Tool song goes, you're only guilty if you get caught, or it's only wrong if you get caught.
Is it the I can't say what I want to, even if I'm just kidding? Yeah,
I believe so. Yeah, I think it's off Opiate, but
Yeah,
it's only wrong if you get caught. And it's like, that's if no one else is there to judge you, did you commit a crime? It's like, if a tree falls in the woods, does it make a sound?
Oh, Bill, you're actually, never mind. The song's Jerk Off.
Yes, Jerk Off. Fucking A. And perfect for this show.
And, yeah, exactly.
And I'm really bad, but like, since albums went away, well, I mean, they're coming back, but it's like you don't get to look at the album anymore and figure out the titles. But I think it's, you know, one of those situations where it's like, well, if you could get away with something and you know you can get away with it, even though it's wrong, would you still do it?
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not saying, that I would.
good save.
I agree, yeah.
Yeah, so what does that say about you as a person? And what does that say if you could turn it on and turn it off? You know, and that's one of the interesting things here. That's why we understand Ricky's dilemma. We already know where JT's coming from, but we know if Emil Hirsch was in that, his character was in there, he'd be like, he'd be Ricky. No, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, Brian Cox would be like, no, we can't do this, you know? And, cause I'm Brian Cox and I'm cool. So, at any age.
Yeah, and that's interesting, Bill, because, you know, like you said, the Dead Girl's not about the mystery, and the film, because the film's intentions don't lie with the mystery of the Dead Girl, it tells its own story and it tells it well, whereas with Jane Doe, it's all about the mystery, it's all about the discovery, and that's what kind of positions them as they're similar, but they're very different in their in what they look to accomplish. So something to go back to the Prince of Darkness comparison for a second.
Man. Sure.
One of Jameson Parker's lines in that film, which I love, is it's talking about the canister of green goo in the church basement. Yeah. He's like, it's reaching out, it's influencing. And something I like about Jane Doe is that there is a sense of reality kind of getting bent at some points.
Oh, yeah.
And I really thought that was a neat touch, because I thought there was a genuine atmosphere being created pretty much in the basement, you know, the offices downstairs in the hall, you know, the sort of long hallway leading to the morgue and everything like that. And I think, you know, isn't there this saying, Bill, like, that person didn't need to lift a finger and they got a job or something like that. They made it look so easy. And I think, you know, without saying too much, like Jane Doe kind of has that same thing going on.
Oh yeah. And I think it's interesting. The deeper they dig into her, the worse things get.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, oh man,
there's a little bit of kind of, yeah, don't read this as a comparison of the two movies, but in some ways it's almost like there's a bit of a Book of the Dead thing kind of going on as well.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, like, you know, well, you read the words and now you got to deal with the...
Yeah, you read the Latin, you idiot.
Clatu, barata.
I was just going to do that, man. Nikto. Oh, man, that's funny. But yeah, exactly. And again, is ignorance an excuse? It's like, but oh man, that was just, no, I think both movies were tremendous in what they did. And it would have been interesting. What if, I guess we'd have to see a movie where, like, you know, what if two female were performing an autopsy on a woman or a guy? Like, what if it was a guy? Would it have been different? You know,
I'd like to see a mirror version of that. Yeah,
and how would it play out? You know, how would a female writer write it? How would a female director direct it? You know, and what would it be in the end? You know, the only comparison is the non-horror film with starring Molly Parker, which you haven't seen yet.
I need to see it.
Oh, you need to see it, Johnny, big time. What was it, First Kiss? Or
no, it's just called Kiss.
Just Kiss, that's what I thought, I'm sorry. Yeah. And, you know, she's a mortician and perfect dead guy. You know, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. You know, and again, she's alone. And, you know, nothing gets, I think, more intimate in death when, if you're having an autopsy. I mean, talk like more intimate. This person's more intimate with you than anybody has ever been when you were alive, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's, and I think that's why so many people are like, an autopsy? No!
Yeah.
You're not going to pull out their heart and their kidneys and stomach. And it's funny because one of my friends, Vega Joe, we'll call him Vega Joe.
Vincent Vega.
Yeah. he used to have a Chevy Vega and everybody called him Vega Joe. Nice. He worked in a funeral home where he would, you know, pick up the bodies, and of course calls could come in anytime, day or night, you know, and it could be a home, it could be, you know, a hospital, whatever. And it never bothered him once because he said, "Well, I know the person's not in there." He said, "It's just, you know, they're gone. You know, it's not, the body no longer counts." You know, and that's why, you know, seeing him at funerals and all, he's upset for the people who are, you know, feeling, but he wasn't upset because he's like, that person, they're gone. They're good. They're free. You know, they're out, you know, and, you know, whatever. So it was interesting that perspective because so many of us, like, when we see someone that we love in a casket, if it's open, it's like, oh, man, you know, so-and-so shouldn't be in there. This is horrible. And, you know, but it's not them. And I guess that's why one of the things that got me through, you know, the passing of my parents and everything else, because I'm like, dad's gone, mom's gone, they're out of that.
Yeah.
They're having fun somewhere, who knows where, you know, doing whatever. Hopefully they're together, you know, having a good time like they always deserve to. But, and it's just interesting that in both cases, well, those bodies aren't necessarily empty, and it's like, you know, it's like,
I think that's a good point, Bill, because it, you know, you were talking about sort of it's the death is freeing, kind of. It's but I like how both films kind of toy with that notion, especially Jane Doe, of
which is, well, really sad. It becomes a very sad film, actually, just like Dead Girl in regards to sadness, I think.
Yeah, there's you know, ironically, there's something mournful to Jane Doe because totally. it's you know, there is a story, and there is that sense of, I guess, you know, what happens when it's like a body is not at rest, kind of thing,
for hundreds of years.
Possibly.
You know, and that is horrific. And talk about a prison. Talk about the, oh my God, it's horrible. And I don't know if they're going to do a Jane Doe 2, but like Weekend at Bernie's with Jane Doe. But it was just interesting. It's just really sad and horrific. And it's like, because that's why it's like, I understood, you know, it's like, okay, I get the pain. I get the lashing out now, you know? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter, man. This is someone who's, it's not like, I don't know if you could still feel and all that and like be able to reflect and go, oh yeah, yeah, these people really don't know what they're doing and all, and be like, I get a chance to get back at somebody. Everybody's going down, you know, type of thing. So that was really interesting. I think it raised a lot of wonderful questions, and that's why I can't wait to watch the movie again. And I haven't felt that way about a horror movie in a long time, but I definitely want to check it out again. Definitely, this is one I'm definitely going to get on
excellent
Blu-ray. Like I bought Dead Girl right away.
Oh yeah, it's in my collection though. I don't watch it very often. Yeah.
No, it's a hard one to watch more than once, but and the movie poster alone is very, and I think they did it well in a very
Subtle.
subtle teasing fashion of it's almost like it reminds me of an old what is it? Oh gosh, I can't Public Image Limited's one of their old covers where it was a cover that they made where they were it looks like a woman's vaginal opening, and
Yeah.
they were just getting slammed, and courts were getting involved with vulgarity and blah blah blah, and they're like, well, if you took the time to look and get past your own judgment, you'd see that it's just a hairy tongue. And that's exactly what it was. And then everybody's like, oh. Like, it's like, get your minds out of the gutter, you sons of bitches. And that's, of course, that's why, Johnny Lydon did it. But, and it worked, and it's like he got at those sensibilities. And,
Yeah, you know, it's since we're on the subject of misleading artwork, the album Wrecked by the band Pig. You look at that and it's like, oh, okay, it's like all pink and fleshy, and it actually looks like a sort of a half image of a vaginal slit. Well, when you tilt it on its tilt it to the left, oh, it's like a closed eye and an eyebrow, basically. So, it's yeah. And I admire that a bit of it's simple yet very clever and very indicative of what Dead Girl is kind of about. The image, that alternate poster image, is like it has a diseased look to it. It looks very it looks unhealthy. It looks
Totally.
yeah it looks like it's in rigor mortis, basically. So yeah.
Well, speaking of rigor mortis, the interesting thing about the Autopsy of Jane Doe poster is, with a great tagline, "Every body has a secret."
Yep.
We're looking at our Jane Doe, Olwyn Kelly. She's not facing us. She's upside down, and it's funny because you, as soon as you look at her, you're like, with the flowing hair and all, even with like the dead-looking eyes, you're just like, I want to like see her the right way because she's gorgeous, and it's funny because you're actually like looking down on her, and that's one of the interesting things because we have our two more, gentlemen doing the autopsy who are looking down on her because they have to for scientific means. Yet, on the gurney and Dead Girl, we have two boys looking down on her because they want to look down on her. And I just think it's interesting that you can't, like, unless you have the poster of the Autopsy of Jane Doe in your hands, you can't make it right. And I think that was really cool. I think it was I think it's an excellent poster too.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, definitely. I love the starkness of the image, and it's a very white on white kind of image too. It's
Yeah, the
very
monochrome,
yeah. So
Absolutely.
it gives sort of a window into kind of the this sort of just the default world of sterilization of a mortician kind of. And
Absolutely, it's cold. It makes you feel cold looking at the poster,
yeah, and I guess that coldness is also plays into the characters as well. So,
And a hint of red in the dead girl on the lips is interesting because it's like, well, why would they be red? Well, watch the movie. It's like, what kind of rating did you give Dead Girl, Johnny?
Oh, Dead Girl's a 4 out of 5 for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I gave it a 4.5 out of 5.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, that's why it's on my best of horror films of all time list. And
It's really a movie that punches me in the gut, and maybe it punches me too hard, too much in the gut for me to give it that extra 0.5. I don't know.
well, that's part of the reason I gave it that extra 0.5 because I'm like, man, this is a tight story. It really worked. And
You know what, Bill? I didn't like the one sequence, like in the third act, which was played for comedy. That might have been why I knocked it down a little bit.
I know. But anyway, I think I turned a blind eye to that. But
it's an extremely strong film. Yeah.
Yeah, and The Autopsy of Jane Doe, I gave 4 out of 5 to.
Yeah, that one I gave a 3.5 out of 5. I didn't. There was some stuff that would go into spoiler territory that I wasn't entirely on board for. But overall,
that's why I want to see it again.
Yeah, I mean, I picked it up, so I'll watch it again eventually. But I, like I said, and like we were talking about, I loved the mystery. I loved how. I think I said something to Kim McDonald, who wrote a review of it for Loud Green Bird.
Yes, she did.
I said I think it was fascinating how they created a strong female character who does not utter a single word and does not move a muscle through the entire movie.
Oh, she rocked it, man. I can imagine it's like, all right, need a break. And I could see like Brian Cox, like, well, she's just lying around anyway. Who cares? You know, and like, you know, Alwyn Kelly smacking him in the head or something.
Yeah.
First, I could see like, you know, the assistant to Alwyn Kelly, like, you know, as soon as director yells cut, the guy or woman running over with a robe that she could put on or something like that. But and it was good because it wasn't exploitive in that sense at all. So.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, Bill, if I may, the director, this is my heavy duty Wikipedia research, but the director felt it was necessary to have an actress for the part to help connect the audience on a human level.
Yeah.
And on some level, the decision was also a practical one because he believed that doing some of the close up scenes with a prosthetic would have been impossible, which I don't disagree with. And she said he said one of the reasons she was selected was for her knowledge of yoga, which helped her control her body and breathing, which explains a lot, because when you are watching a movie with a cadaver, you know, you're always looking for that moment where it's like, oh, they hitched a breath.
Or, yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah.
You can tell they're breathing or they blink their eyes or something like that. And I felt like that performance was spot on, you know. I didn't feel any of that or see any of that.
No, she was seamless, perfect in that. Yeah, everybody, both films were solid with acting and everything else, and cinematography, the atmosphere that they both conjured. An excellent double feature, man.
Yeah, back definitely
those. But
yeah, Bill, I didn't do much prep for this show, and I think we came to some interesting conclusions about things.
Yeah, and I know we'd like to hear from other people, you know, what did you think of it? And
please,
you could reply on CrashPalaceProductions.com, where you could find links to Johnny's stories and Randy Broska and Dixie Ferry herself as well, and Paul J. Williams. You know, check items out there. And also, you know, when you listen to this show on iTunes, please give us a starred comment as well.
Yes. Well, you can find me, if you want to, on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can also find my writing, in addition to Crash Palace Productions, at loudgreenbird.com.
And you could find me at Crash Palace on Twitter. And we have special scream outs tonight, Johnny.
Yeah, that's right. We kind of like jumped ahead.
I don't know. Just the way it's the ebb and flow. Just, you know, whatever.
Have at it, Bill.
All right. These are wonderful souls that you could find on Twitter. In fact, you've seen them all because they are wonderful actresses and writers and producers and directors. And I have the honor of, I followed them and they follow me, and I'm very pleased with that. So here we go, horror fans and more. The beautiful, well, they're all beautiful. They're all lovely. They're all vivacious. And they're all very intelligent and ass-kicking women. Tristan Risk.
Yeah.
And you could find her at Little Miss Risk. She's the high priestess of the low brow. I think it's awesome. And she's also connected with Sweet Soul Burley Q and Circus Darling with Caravan of Creeps. And she's the Penthouse D.E. Pet and Beatrice Johnson from American Mary, of course. And the amazing Denise Gossett, the woman behind Shriek Fest. She's an actress. Get the Gringo, I Saw the Light, The Office, New Adventures of Old Christine, Veronica Mars. You could check out her reel on IMDb. You could check out all of these people on IMDb, by the way. And she's out of LA, of course. And check out Shriekfest. Go to shriekfest.com. An absolutely stellar festival for horror. Jessica Cameron.
Yeah.
And she's at Jessica Cameron _. Actress, filmmaker, scream queen, horror nerd. Check out her reel on YouTube and also go to her website, jessicacameron.com. She is amazing. Johnny Numb had the pleasure of interviewing her several moons ago, so check out that show. And of course, yep. She's also on IMDb. One woman who we've interviewed the most on this show, I love talking to her all the time, and I know she'll be on again soon. I could feel it. The fantastic Maria Olson at Maria Olson 66. She's a horror actor, writer, producer, and director, quadruple threat. Check out her stuff on IMDb. Her and Jessica Cameron combined, I think they're both working in the middle of like 50 different movies right now.
Good Lord, yes. Yeah.
It's not an exaggeration. They are both incredible, and they don't quit. And here's someone
Meanwhile, Billy and I have zero movies going on, so what does that say?
Well, we don't have money, and nobody wants us. But anyway... Anyway, here's a woman, and I know everybody's waiting for her sequel. She plays the role of Tank in an excellent movie called Crawl or Die, and that is Nicole M. Alonzo. Don't forget the M in that. Otherwise known as Nikki, she's an actor. She's Tank in Crawl or Die, and you could take part in Tank Army and follow her exploits. And also go to crawlordietrilogy.com. And those films are directed by the great Oklahoma Ward. And right now, Nikki and Oklahoma are doing what I call flip for film. They're flipping homes. And with that money, they're not even, and I know they're not investing it in themselves. They're investing it in the sequel to Crawl or Die. So check that out at crawlordietrilogy.com, and also go to NicoleAlonzo.com. And she is just too fantastic. She's been on the show as well. The excellent I Am Melanie Wise. She's an actor, producer, principal, and Artemis Pix, of Artemis Pix, and the founder as well. She's of Artemis Film Fest. And you could check all of her stuff out on IMDb, ArtemisMotionPictures.com, and ArtemisFilmFestival.com. And you, man, you've loved her for a long time, all of you. Debbie Rochon.
Yeah.
And hers is great, too, just like Tristan Risk. From the underbelly to the underground. How about that? Check her out on IMDb. She doesn't quit either. The lovely Juliet Landau. And for Buffy the Vampire Slayer fans, she was Drusilla, of course, the daughter of the late, great Martin Landau. And also in Toolbox Murders with Angela Bettis. Directed by Toby Hooper. She is an actress and a director and a producer. Check out her excellent site, JulietLandau.com. And these last two, well, they don't even need introduction. In fact, I'm going to go, forget it. No, D. Wallace, D_Wallace. Who is that? Oh my gosh, if you don't know, get out of here. Actress, author, spiritual teacher. And this is the only official D. Wallace Twitter. She's into horror, creation, Instagram. Go to her Instagram account at instagram.com/TheDWallace/. And you could also see her site at imdwallace.com. And when this woman followed me, I almost freaked out, because to me, she's the one who set the standard for women in the 70s and beyond because of her screen prowess and to show that a woman can lead the way. And it's not Sigourney Weaver. And it's not... oh my gosh, it's Princess Leia, Carrie Fisher, because this woman came before them both. And that is the excellent, phenomenal Pam Grier.
Wow.
Yeah, Pam Grier, PhD. And you could follow her at Pam Grier. Her interests, history, economics, veterinary science, music, film, art, and philosophy. Plato believed women should be leaders. And she says, love mom's peach cobbler and yoga. And you could follow her on Twitter at Pam Grier. She's an amazing woman, as we know. They all are, and help continue to celebrate Women in Horror Month with us through the entire month of February. And we're going to keep on keeping on with more Women in Horror shows coming up. Right, Johnny?
Absolutely, Bill. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, same here, my friend.
All right.
Time to dine.
Wake up. Time to dine.
Ah! Oh, great. Bye, man.
See you, Bill.